Expressed during the show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Good Living Show. I have been away for a few weeks and I know that we've had some recorded shows, but I'm glad to be back and have a great guest this morning who's going to give us a lot of information. And we often have doctors from ONS here, and I think it's so important that we hear so many different sides of kind of what's going on, and ONS kind of covers the whole body. So today we're going to be talking about spine specifically, and Dr. Hiran Makanji, I might have said that wrong, but maybe he'll correct me. And he is a spine specialist. So welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. My focus on the body is on the neck and the back. And okay. So I spend a lot of time seeing patients with neck and back issues. I also do a little bit of general orthopedics as well. But, you know, the reason the neck and the back are an interest to me is because it's a very common thing. Most people have at some point in their life issues with their neck and their back. And my goal with the rest of our ONS team is to figure out how to get you back to your baseline as quickly as possible. And when you need something more significant done, figure out what's the safest way to do it.
I was thinking about when you said that. Oh, yes. How many times do you see your, you know, somebody you know grabbing their back saying, oh, what I do? Oh, no. And especially necks, too. I know that I have several friends that have chronic issues with neck and back. So good to know somebody that can handle that. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about some of the things that, you know, I usually say let's walk through the what happened. So I come to you and I've got a pain in my neck, and it's not my husband. It's an actual pain in my neck.
Well, you know, typically most neck pain and back pain is transient in nature. It's typically related not to a big kind of event or trauma. You know, most people think they get back or neck pain if, you know, they're trying to lift something heavy and something bad happens. But I would say a majority of the patients that I see are folks who, you know, maybe bent in their car to pick up something, or maybe were turning around too quickly and then get a pain. And depending on how long it's been going on, kind of dictates how we begin treating it. For someone who comes in to see me with, you know, maybe a couple of days of neck pain that's not getting better, we start by doing a thorough history as to what happened, what associated symptoms are there. The big thing for a spine surgeon is to figure out, okay, do you have any symptoms that have me concerned about a pinched nerve or a pinched spinal cord or something that could cause a neurological problem? Once we figure out that it's not something like that, then our goal is to treat you symptomatically. Most of these issues self-resolve, but while they're resolving, they can be quite painful and debilitating. And so our goal with the use of medication, but also with getting people started with exercises and physical therapy, is to accelerate that timeline of recovery so you can get back to your normal life.
I think that when I was looking at your bio, that was the one thing that really stuck out to me, is that oftentimes people think when I'm going to an orthopedic surgeon or an orthopedic surgeon group, oh no, here I go, I'm going to need surgery. But right in your bio, non-operative treatments was stuck out to me most. So talk about some of that things. And I know physical therapy and other types of...
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, if I was to put a number on it, I would say 90 to 95% of the people I see do not need surgery for their neck or back.
That's good news.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the treatment starts with a combination of medical management to get you out of that acute pain. And then to put you in a position where we can do exercises and physical therapy to prevent re-injury, to teach you how to do things properly, maybe lift things properly, or exercise muscles in your neck or back that you probably have never exercised before because you never had to.
Right, right.
When those things don't work, we do have several physiatrists in our practice who specialize in doing injections. And depending on where your pain is coming from and where we think the injection is going to be most useful, you know, they and myself will kind of direct certain injections to see if they can be helpful. There are many different places in the spine where you can put an injection. And figuring out by talking to the patient, doing a great physical exam, we figure out kind of which one is going to be most useful.
All right. So 95% of the folks that come see you don't really need surgery. What about that 5% that does?
Yeah, the 5% that do, I think, fall into kind of two different categories. And for a spine surgeon, the thing that spurs us to act more aggressively is typically neurological decline or neurological symptoms. And what I mean by that is not just the pain that's shooting down the arm or the leg or the sciatica type symptoms,
right.
but actual neurological weakness. You know, a certain muscle is not working correctly. You can't walk upstairs because your quadriceps is too weak. You can't use your arm because you can't lift your arm above your head.
Right.
In certain cases, especially with patients who have pinched spinal cords, you know, they have issues with using their hands. They have clumsiness. They can't grip things properly. They can't walk properly because of balance issues. And those things spur us to action a little bit more quickly because we know that the natural history of those problems is that they will get worse.
Right.
And the longer they persist, even with a perfect surgery, the less likelihood of getting full recovery because you're dealing with nerves and spinal cords and things like that.
Right. So if you... So let's say I notice a little something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm going to make something up. My hand's numb, but it won't go away. It continues to be numb. That's where I would call somebody like you and say,
"Yeah, I think people call me for all sorts of things, but that would be something where I would encourage you to at least see either myself or, you know, a hand specialist or somebody.
Right, right.
And the good thing about our group is that we talk, we text, we talk all the time. So if I see somebody who's having finger or hand numbness, and I'm like, you know, I don't think it's coming from the spine. I think it's carpal tunnel or something else. I can just text one of my hand surgeons and tell him, hey, you know, I want to send this person to see you tomorrow. Let me know what you think. And a lot of times it's, you know, we get a kind of an easy answer. We do a couple of tests and figure out what's going on. And where it's very helpful is actually when we have cases where we're all kind of scratching our heads a little bit, trying to figure out where the problem's coming from. And being able to talk through that and kind of have a logical process is very helpful.
I definitely think, you know, when I think about ONS and specialty groups like this, if I do come to you, if I go to the hand specialist and he's like, wait a minute, this may be something else, there's lots of resources there to kind of figure out your problem. You know, you can always start at your GP and go from there, but then, you know, you've got everything all in one place. One thing I was going to talk to you about was kind of the degenerative part of it, because we deal with an older population, I know, in my particular situation, and we hear about degenerative, you know, joints and degenerative discs and all kinds of things. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So, you know, degenerative disc disease, arthritis, all kind of sort of the same cascade of things that happen as the body sees more wear and tear. It's just, you know, developing degenerative disc disease in your neck or your back is pretty similar to developing arthritis in your hip or your knee. It's just it happens over time, usually not a trauma or inciting event. The big question that people always ask me is, what did I do to cause this, or what can I do to slow it down?
Right.
And more research is now telling us that genetics plays a much larger role in this than anything that you or I do on a day-to-day basis. So yes, I mean, if you see a, you know, a former NFL football player or someone who's been doing construction for 30 years, yes, you know, their spine may look much more degenerated, but I have patients who literally have been taking great care of their body for years, exercising, doing things, and they have pretty bad degenerative disease. And the only way to really explain that is to think that, you know, there's something in their genes that causes them to wear down their discs earlier. The concept of degenerative disc disease is, you know, as my discs degenerate, I'm going to be in pain, I'm going to lose this, I'm going to lose that. But I would tell you the most important thing is to actually optimize yourself to handle the degeneration that is very likely to come as you get older. And what I mean by that is keeping your core strong, keeping your back muscles loose and stretched out, keeping your neck muscles loose. I mean, now a big thing we talk about is posture, mm-hmm. especially with, you know, kind of electronic devices. I'm just as guilty as everybody else of looking down at my phone for several hours a day.
Yep.
But that certainly doesn't help the situation. And I think it's too early to know whether, you know, in long term, does that contribute to early degeneration? But I do know it does contribute to muscular imbalance mm-hmm. and muscular kind of fatigue and pain.
Well, you can feel it, you know?
Yeah, you can feel exactly. You can feel
it. I know on weekends when I'm on a computer a lot, but on the weekends I'm on my phone a lot. And by the Saturday evening, I'm like, oh, gosh, my neck needs stretched or something.
Exactly. And a lot of what I emphasize and what I think my physical therapist emphasizes is that, you know, we are trying to optimize your body to handle what's inevitably going to happen, which is degeneration. I mean, it is the longer you live, the more likely you are to have degenerative problems. But if we can get your back and your neck loose and strong, and the likelihood is that even if your x-ray looks degenerated, your MRI looks degenerated, you'll probably be asymptomatic. And that's all that really matters.
So I have a question. So my parents, you know, are of an older generation. I'm kind of in that sandwich generation with mm-hmm. older parents that are now aging and need stuff, and kids that are in college and trying to, you know, somehow manage it all. And my parents talk to me a lot about supplements. And I know this is not your area of expertise, but do they work? Do they help?
I think, you know, if you look at kind of the scientific evidence and the way scientific studies are done, which is randomizing people to supplements or no supplements.
Right.
A lot of the things that we do to treat back and neck pain and even other pains around the body don't really have a great scientific basis.
Okay.
However, the contrary to that is that for some people it works. And the downsides of using them, as far as we know based on studies, is very minimal.
Right.
So I always encourage people to, if they want to take chondroitin and glucosamine, or, you know, they want to try, you know, fish oil and all those things, I always encourage them to do it because the downside is very minimal. I don't necessarily know if it helps.
Right. So if it makes you feel better, why not?
If it makes you, and that goes for alternative treatments, like, you know, people often ask me about, should I go to a chiropractor? Mm-hmm. Should I go to an acupuncturist?
Mm-hmm.
The downsides of going to those types of practitioners is very low. And so even though I'm not certain it's going to help you, if it does, that's outstanding. That's 100% success rate for you.
Right.
And so I always encourage people, especially when they're struggling to get better with kind of our formal medication and physical therapy, to seek out some of those avenues and see if we can get you feeling better. Because like I said, ultimately it doesn't matter what your x-ray or your MRI looks like. If you are feeling better,
right.
that's all that really matters.
My husband is very scientific and he's like, look, the studies show none of that helps. I'm like, just don't tell my 75-year-old parents that. Why? Why tell them? They think it helps, whatever. It's not hurting them. Well, we are going to take a quick break right now, and then we're going to be back with Dr. Bakanji, and he's going to tell us more about what he does and ONS and how he can help us. We'll be right back.
When my husband was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, his doctor told us that he would soon need care and attention. They also told me it's important that I have support and not be Colin's only caretaker. We found a wonderful solution here in Fairfield County for both of us with Osborne Home Care. Their in-home personal care staff is specially trained to care for people with all forms of memory loss. And Hope, the registered nurse case manager from Osborne Home Care, is so good at anticipating his needs. She is also ready to help if his care plan needs to be adjusted. It's exactly what we both need to manage Colin's condition.
Osborne Home Care is an affiliate of the Osborne, the area's premier senior living community. Visit OsborneHomeCare.org or call 888-9-OSBORNE for more information. Osborne Home Care, Connecticut, license number 0000933.
All right, welcome back. We've got a great great surgeon here, and that's something we just said on the break we're going to talk a little bit about. Dr. McConjee from ONS, and he's going to tell us a little more about kind of what happens. That, you know, we talked about that 95% that need physical therapy and some other interventions, but that 5% that needs surgery. And for me, you know, and I said this on the break, you know, I would be very concerned, oh my gosh, you're going to open up my back and I'm going to need all this stuff done, and how long am I going to be out of work and all this other stuff. So might as well ask the expert here. Let's talk about that.
Sure. I think, you know, the over the last decade, the advances in spine surgery have made it very safe, very effective, and the recovery just much easier than kind of we've had in the past. And this goes for both, you know, younger patients who need surgery, but also a majority of the degenerative population I see, and people who need surgery for things like spinal stenosis and disc herniations, are older. And obviously the main concern is, am I too old to have spine surgery? How dangerous is it? And I think the way the anesthetics work and the way we handle blood loss and our minimally invasive techniques and what we call muscle-sparing techniques, where we try not to disturb the muscles too much, allow for a pretty quick recovery. So for most of my patients who require kind of typical spinal stenosis surgery, even in their 70s and even in their 80s, spend maybe two nights in the hospital. They're walking the next day.
Wow.
In fact, if I do surgery in the morning, I make them walk the same day. Because I think early mobilization is how you get people back to their baseline.
Right.
And they're typically, most of them get discharged to home rather than going to rehab. And yes, there's some pain with the incision, which you would expect, but
sure,
we control that pretty well. And most people by about 2 weeks are saying, you know what, this is not as bad as I thought it was.
So we're going home on day two-ish. And then what happens when we get home? We've got some physical therapy coming to the house and some exercises that we're doing, or is that later?
Sure, that's usually later. I usually tell most of my patients, especially for the low back and even for the neck, that your job initially is to walk. Hmm. That is the best exercise immediately after spine surgery. You don't need to start doing, you know, crunches and this and that. In fact, I encourage you not to do that because it's going to set you back a little bit. But
right,
if you get up and you start walking around, that is the best recovery you're going to have. In fact, I don't even send most of my patients to formal physical therapy until about 3 to 4 weeks after surgery.
Great. So the surgery itself. Now, I read in your bio that you do some robotics and some other things. So tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, some of the newer technology in spine surgery involves navigation, which is using a real-time intraoperative imaging study to essentially navigate where your instruments are going. And it shows you a real-time picture. If I put something on one of your bones, I can see exactly where it is on a CT scan. So that has made things safer. We know exactly where we are. We know how we're putting in instrumentation, if that's what you need. The robotics takes it a step further. Now we actually can navigate, but also have a robot arm that will position itself in the perfect spot to do a pre-programmed instrumentation that I have done before I even started the surgery. And it just makes spine surgery safer and in some cases faster.
It really is kind of amazing when we look at technology, and we alluded to this on the break too, that, you know, some people's vision of what they're going to go through is just what they've seen on TV or heard from somebody that had surgery 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And now things are so different, and recovery is quicker, and maybe it should have been quicker then, I don't know, but because there was a lot more invasive and things going on. But I think when we talk to any of your doctors from orthopedic and neurosurgery specialists or other doctors, it really has come so far that you shouldn't avoid making the phone call. Because a lot of people avoid making the phone call because they're afraid.
Exactly. I think, you know, especially spine surgery is probably the scariest of the orthopedic surgery, just because it's, you know, involves the spine and people hear about horror stories.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a quality of life surgery in most circumstances.
Right.
And so the patients I operate on are typically at a point in their lives where they're like, look, I can't do the things I like to do. I can't get out of the house and go for a walk. I can't go to the grocery store. I can't do this. I can't do that. And I want my life back.
Mm.
And that's what our aim is to do, especially for patients who are older, you know, that fear is very real, mm-hmm. that will I even survive this? How can I recover? And I think it's part of my job and, you know, the other spine surgeons in our practice, it's our job to set their expectations and tell them what recovery is like. Mm-hmm. But I encourage especially folks who are take good care of themselves and who are healthy and active, if you're losing the ability to remain active, there are far greater consequences for your heart, your lungs, the rest of your body if you start becoming sedentary. And mm-hmm. so if spine surgery can keep you active, I think there are benefits even beyond just your mental state. I think there's benefits for your cardiovascular mm-hmm. health going forward.
And I think, you know, you alluded earlier, or you talked about quality of life, and certainly that's all quality of life, because mm-hmm. it's not just being able to bend down and pick up your grandkids. It's also what happens, you know, what's the long term if it does start affecting your heart, or, you know, because you're so active, you're not getting diabetes or whatever it is. You know, I think it's all very, very important that we kind of look at all the little signals and then put them all together with somebody that can tell us, like you.
Sure. And I think also, you know, a lot of it is about getting more information, right? A lot of people aren't ready or don't, and frankly, come see me and they don't need surgery. You know, I tell patients all the time, look, I don't think you are at a point where your symptoms are bad enough to need surgery. However, if you know the information, you know that, you know, if this gets worse, there are options. Right. The other thing for my older population, I tell them, is I want you to maintain your independence. A lot of folks around this area, even in their 70s, 80s, even 90s, live alone. They take mm-hmm. care of themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, they're able to go to the bathroom, go to the grocery store, kind of do everything on their own. And if you're beginning to lose the ability to do that, I think it's very important to at least get an evaluation and see if there's something small intervention we can do to help you maintain that.
There were two thoughts I had. One was mm-hmm. on what you just said, and I think that oftentimes people do start losing that, and they're like, oh, it's just normal aging. But then you get the social isolation, and you're not going to the grocery store. Somebody else is going for you. And then it just all keeps, you know, going back, when maybe initially we could have stopped something or fixed something quickly. The other thing I was going to say was, it's unfortunate that we do have so much information coming at us all the time. So I know, you know, when anything happens to me, my mother, anybody, you know, I think anybody in this day and age, they go to the internet first and say, oh, I'm going to type in my symptoms and see what pops up, which can be incredibly scary, you know, and it can be,
exactly.
you know, on the other side, it can be incredibly like, oh, it's no big deal. You know, my sister is notorious for constantly, you know, I've got this. This is my symptoms and this is what the internet says I have. And I think, oh, gosh, well, go to the doctor and tell him that. He's probably not going to be very
I mean, I'm just as guilty as everybody else outside of orthopedic things. You know, if I start feeling something, I look it up. But I think the, you know, it's a double-edged sword. There's a lot of information out there, and some of it is very good information and some of it is not. In fact, I sometimes will have my patients go to certain websites where I know there's good information
sure.
about what a potential surgery is going to look like, and I will send them there to get more information. But I think ultimately, you know, if it's something that you've tried kind of the, all right, took some Tylenol, I took some Advil, it's not going away, I think it just helps to get it looked at by a specialist because, look, like I said, 90% of the time I'm going to tell you that you're okay. We're going to get this figured out for you.
Right.
But for those, you know, 5 to 10% of people who have a really bad problem, if we can get to it earlier, your quality of life is better. And in some cases, especially when you're dealing with the spine, you can stop neurological dysfunction from getting worse.
Right. You said, you know, I took the Advil, I took the ibuprofen, the Tylenol, whatever. Is there a time limit that we should put on ourselves to say, okay, I've done this for 5 days, it's not getting better, I need to see somebody?
Yeah, I think it depends on the symptoms. You know, for most, if it's back and neck isolated, I say, you know, give it a week.
Okay.
And take those medications as tolerated, you know, by your stomach. And obviously with the Advil, you got to be careful with your stomach.
Sure.
If you have pain that's kind of, you know, sciatica type in nature or shooting down the arm, you know, people, I encourage, you know, give it maybe 4 or 5 days. If it's not getting better, come in and get evaluated. And for people with neurological dysfunction and weakness, you know, and what I mean by weakness is that, you know, my foot's not pointing up anymore. I can't get it to point upwards.
Yeah, that's
those types of things. I tell people, you got to come in because
right.
It's, you know, the way I look at it, it's like an electrical circuit. And if you unplug the electrical circuit, the machine's not going to work. And the longer it's unplugged, the harder it is to get the machine working again.
Right.
So I tell people with weakness to come in as soon as possible. But the run-of-the-mill back stuff, I think most of it goes away. And when people come to see me earlier than that, I think it just makes me look good because it was going to go away anyways.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
No, I think that's awesome. You mentioned sciatica. I know I think my mom is the one that every time you have that kind of pain, she's like, oh, you must have changed your shoes. That's what my doctor told me. I don't know, Mom.
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, all those things that we do, the way we hold up our bodies, our posture, shoes we wear, how active we are, I think all contribute a little bit to why we experience some of these symptoms. But there are certain entities in the degenerative spine that we know, no matter what you do, you know, change your shoes and
right.
walk better, we know that the symptoms are not going to go away.
Right.
And that's when you need an honest opinion from a surgeon who can tell you, like, look, we can certainly try to manage this, but this is a structural problem that's not going to improve. And that's our role is to advise people on you know, I would say not tell people when they need surgery, but advise them, give them information
right.
so they can make an educated decision.
And I think that is kind of what it's always about. Let's, you know, figure it out and come up with a plan. And, you know, then we'll go from there.
Exactly.
So the plan is to try this first. And then, you know, if this doesn't work, we'll go with that. And I think that's, you know, we are a very impatient society. We want now. I want it gone. I want it fixed.
Sure.
I want to take this pill. I want to do whatever it takes to get it done. And sometimes it's not that easy. Sometimes it is. Let's, you know, work through this process. And I know even with us, a lot of our clients are in the middle of, you know, different kind of treatments and different kind of things. And when you talk to them, they're like, you know, I didn't want to wait this long. I didn't want it to go on this long. But, oh my gosh, I feel 100% better. So, you know, it's nice that if you've got a plan and maybe the end of the plan is surgery, but you try everything else, just
exactly.
think how strong you are going into it. So I was just told we have a minute left. I want to thank you so much. I think the information was just incredible.
Thank you for having me.
And if you would like to talk to Dr. Makanji, call ONS at 203-869-1145 or go onto the website www.osbornhomecare.org. We will link you right to ONS. Thanks again, and we will see you soon.
AM 1490 and FM 105.5 WGCH Greenwich.
White House this morning to ask for assistance federally.
Tennessee Governor Bill Lee pleading for federal help. President Trump has tweeted his condolences as at least 9 fatalities are being attributed to severe weather overnight in the state.
4 different counties have, as of this morning, had confirmed fatalities in Benton County, Putnam County, Wilson County, Davidson County. 9 confirmed fatalities so far. There are a number of people that are missing.
A portion of East Central